Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news. Sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show.
Again, I would like to welcome you to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. We have a big show coming up today. Just in case you're not familiar with Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. Now, our call-in number today is 909-265-9189. If you want to join in on the program, the chat room is now open for those who want to join in with us on the conversation. Now, on this week's show, we have NBA star Kobe Bryant versus Pam Bryant, his mother, for Black on Black Crime. She wants to sell some memorabilia, so we'll see how that goes. We have Black on Black Racism. We're going to talk to the author of Anatomy of a Hustle, Clinton Galloway, how cable television came to South Central Los Angeles. We also have the marketing efforts of Mountain Dew against black customers. You know, they're having a lot of problems with the commercials that they put out and some other things and some show updates. So I want to thank you again for tuning in on the program. On last week's show, just in case you missed it, it's in the archives. You can check it out on iTunes, and you can visit espriradio.soulofsyracuse.com/BOBC, that's Black on Black Crime, if you want to check out our shows and archives. But last week we had actress Essence Atkins versus filmmaker Tyler Perry. Well, it was kind of Tyler Perry Productions, but go back and listen to that. Essence Atkins versus Tyler Perry. The NAACP, Ben Jealous versus the other interest of the black community generally, and Vibe Magazine, which bought a lot of fire from Finesse. Vibe Magazine was bought by Spin Media or Spin Magazine, folks. If you want to check out that, go check it out. It's in the archives. You're listening to Black on Black Crime on Esprit Radio. Thanks for joining us. For those who are on the line, if you want to join in, just hit 1 on your line, and we'll bring you in. If you have any questions or comments about the program. Now, before I really get started, I want to talk about Miami Heat star LeBron James was named Most Valuable Player for the fourth time. James has been voted MVP for the second straight season and the fourth time in the past 5 years. Now, he joins Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Wilt Chamberlain with at least 4 MVP awards. Now, James took 120 of the 121 first-place votes in this ballot. Now, there has never been a unanimous winner. The one that came close was Shaq, who also missed it by one. Now, I would have made this a black-on-black crime. I'm sure I'm going to yell at about this. But the only one vote that he didn't get went to Carmelo Anthony. Now, VH1 released images via press release on their pop hip-hop R&B group, TLC's biopic. Now, in this telepic, Kiki Palmer plays Rosanda Thomas, which is Chili. Drew Sidora plays Tion or T-Bon Watkins, T-Boz Watkins, and Little Mama is playing Left Eye, the late Left Eye, Lisa Left Eye Lopez. Now, Carl Payne II is playing Antonio Reed, L.A., and Rochelle 8 was cast as Pebbles or Perry Reed. She was L.A.'s wife at the time. And I have to say, Rachel Aides, I am a big fan of Rachel Aides. So we talk about everybody else in this piece, Denzel and all that, when the commish is on and when Kai is on. Rachel Aides is a cutie. But I think I said enough about Rachel Aides. Let's bring in Finesse. How you doing, Finesse?
Hey, what's going on, Esprit? Before I get started, let me send a shout out to the folks at the Baltimore Times. They're listening, so I'll be on my extra good behavior today. And a shout goes out to my man John Bonacci over at FX Studios and Under Armour. He's also listening today.
Oh, cool. We're glad to have him. Like I said, you can join in and participate. And send shout-outs. We do have the chat room open now, and if you want to send your comments, you can send them to bobc@soulofsyracuse.com. That's Black on Black Crime, bobc@soulofsyracuse.com. We ran your commercials. You good?
Yeah, I'm good now. Because I don't want to get in trouble later on if I don't say these folks' names.
Well, if you have some more, just let them fly. Let them fly. Let me go down to our ATL correspondent, the author and columnist, Kai Sims.
That's my private teacher. My private tutor.
Hey, Kai. Okay. I'll edit him out a little bit later. Hello. How are you?
Oh, Finesse.
I know.
I'm good. You know, how you guys doing?
Hey, Kai. This is going to be a good behavior, which is kind of surprising to me because the commish is on.
Commish.
Ain't nobody scared of the commish. Shoot.
I'm sorry, her mic's open. The commission is on. Did I say that? Hey, Kathleen, how are you?
Now, be afraid. Be very afraid. How are you? Well, I missed you.
I know. We missed you. You've been on the move, so, you know, we had to hold it down, and Finesse has been off the rails since you've been gone.
Oh, now, come on now. I'm not the only one.
Since you want to try to blow people out, we have Daniel on. Hey, Daniel, what's up?
What's going on, folks?
Daniel, see how he got slick and mentioned your name? I did not try to blow you out. I was trying to blow him up.
No problem, man.
Okay.
It's a big house today.
He knows there's nothing but love on the show. So is it nice and sunny or is it raining in Houston?
Actually, I'm in Dallas today, and it's very sunny and nice and warm.
Well, cool. I know it was a rainy day in Georgia yesterday. So.
And it still is.
I might be a little jealous.
Hi, it's still raining in Georgia.
It's still raining.
I told you.
Yeah, I think I saw Noah go by in the ark.
Did he just wave and keep it moving?
Yeah, it's not helping my hair at all.
Now, I don't know if you guys saw the graphics on the show today, but did you see the released photos from the TLC biopic? Did you guys see anybody see that?
Yeah,
they
did
a good job with that.
Yeah.
See, and you guys were complaining, if I remember correctly, complaining about Keke Palmer.
No, I didn't.
No, I think he got the other shows.
Oh, see, here you go. No, I could have sworn this was a black-on-black crime that everybody complained about Keke Palmer playing Chili.
No,
we complained about Megan Good, and we complained about...
Okay, don't commit the crime, Commissioner. Don't commit.
Zoe's
you don't have to shout him out.
Zoe
don't,
Zaldana.
See, and Finesse still threw her out there. Okay, now you can cut her up. Fine, Commissioner. Let her have it.
Those are the ones that I remember us complaining. I don't remember us complaining about Keke Palmer.
Yeah, I remember it because I was talking about the fact that she released an album or CD.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying, well, she couldn't sing, and that doesn't mean she can.
People
and
said
I thought
that.
It was... Yeah, I thought it was more about the acting, and she can sing. So I'm going to have to go back to the tape since everybody is having amnesia.
What I do recall, I remember talking about her performance in Pitch Perfect and how phenomenal her singing was in that movie. And
I remember that.
And that I had seen her music videos and, you know, a couple. I think she was even on 106 in Park a couple times and stuff. So, you know, I don't know.
We discussed it. She was legal. Yeah, I remember all that discussion.
I think I was absent that day.
I know. I'm going to take a zero. That's where Kai was going.
That's where you defend.
All right. Well, since we're clearing up old shows, I just want to say Essence Atkins, since Commission wasn't here on that day. The Marlon Wayans movie, A Haunted House, has been greenlit for a sequel. Now, if you don't know, it was released in January. It went on to gross over $40 million domestically, which was considered a huge film because they only took $2.5 million to make it. And
The company behind the film has now set a release date of March 28, 2014. The title for the upcoming sequel is A Haunted House 2. It was co-written by Marlon Wayans.
You know, I got to give the Wayans brothers credit because one of the things they're good at, besides the TV show, but one of the things they're good at when it comes to movies is they always set a trend or stay in their lane, and they find a way to get it under budget, i.e. like Tyler Perry. And they do great. I personally didn't watch the movie. They wanted me to review it. That's just not my kind of thing. But I'm happy for them. If it works for them and they keep doing what they do, you know, more power to them.
And that sounds like a little hate because Tyler Perry ain't my thing. But y'all still kind of blast me out. And we don't want to bring him up on shows.
Hey.
We're not even talking about him.
That's
don't start nothing.
All right.
That's good. You know what's great about that, though? It's a talented family. The whole family is talented. Their parents must be super proud of them.
Yeah. I mean, Damon's son is incredible in that show, Happy Endings.
I think
that show is hilarious, and it's because of him. I don't think he gets enough shine from that. But, you're right, Kai. That family is extremely talented, close-knit family, and they put out entertaining films. They stay in their lane.
Right.
You know, I just happened to, last night on Bounce, caught Damon Wayans' movie with Bruce Willis. What was the name?
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, it was one of his very first movie roles.
With Halle Berry and, that was actually a good movie.
Yeah.
So just wanted to make sure I mentioned that they are coming back up. I know there was a little tension from our last show with the Essence Atkins, and I talked to Commissioner about it. She actually likes her as an actress, as some of the other folks complained. I'm not going to say no names, but
I like her.
I complained about her statement. I didn't say anything about her acting.
Yeah.
No, you sure didn't. You did say about her statement about Tyler Perry.
I'm
or
a fan.
Tyler Perry Productions.
Right.
She wasn't really talking
about
Tyler Perry.
I didn't talk about. I think she's great. She picks roles that fit her. She never degrades herself. So, I'm happy for her. Just don't talk about Tyler.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I was about to bring Daniel in because Daniel was here. Do you remember all this calmness when we talked about her last time, Daniel? Last week?
Yes, I remember. We talked about her pretty extensively and how she may have thrown herself under the bus when it comes to future projects with Tyler Perry.
I said she couldn't act.
No one said anything about her acting. It was just about her statements about having actors in roles
having. And I still stand by what I said. Don't talk about Tyler Essence, and you don't have to hear me say nothing about
it. We don't love. Don't nobody love Tyler like that.
She wasn't talking about Tyler.
Hey, see, now come in. Can I get a flag on the host?
Don't
make me come up there in this pouring rain.
You guys are defending him like she has not worked. She did but she did the shows with
I love Essence Atkins, and I still do. I just don't know if that comment was wise for her career. I'm a huge and loyal follower of Essence Atkins since she was on Smart Guy.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, my favorite show.
Yeah.
What happened to Smart Guy?
I know.
I had a slowly I turned moment. I love that show.
Let's get back.
Yeah.
Can I get a flag?
You know,
oh my gosh. What happened to that little boy?
Oh
what
my gosh.
Happened?
He's so handsome now.
He grew into his ears.
And became a football player, and he played for Savannah State.
Oh my goodness, thank you.
Not that I'm stalking, but you know, just informing the public.
Y'all got me kind of worried that y'all have been following this little boy career.
No, he's a very talented actor.
And I have to say this about
Cash Mowry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And very smart.
Yeah, that's their brother. That's their younger brother.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the story I'm sticking with.
He's out there. He's still kind of doing stuff, but that's cool.
I
forgot the Your Black World nominated finesse is still kind of getting on us about Tyler Perry because we're about to blow everybody out of water.
Let's change that to accepted. I'm not nominated anymore. I am accepted. Let's get it right.
Oh, We don't have any fanfare music on the board. Let me check that.
All right. You don't need none. Just make sure when you introduce me and when you close out, you get it right.
Okay. You know, I don't take threats lightly, so that's just not my thing. You might want to ease up off of that because I got the mute button. Like, my finger's right on it. Before we go into the show, our main topic is NBA All-Star Kobe Bryant versus his mother. Now, Kai and I talked about this on our conversation show yesterday, but I want to talk about that. And we have author of Anatomy of a Hustle, How Cable Television Came to South Central Los Angeles at the top of the hour. We have Clinton Galloway, and we're going to discuss media and politics. This black-on-black racism is going to hit across the board. But since I missed our first break, I'm going to go directly into my first black-on-black racism. Now, this would be African-American, I don't know what to call them, marketing companies with this Mountain Dew thing versus black customers. Now, if you don't know this story, PepsiCo has pulled an offensive Mountain Dew ad. It's a racist commercial ad, actually. The ad, which was criticized for promoting violence against women, shows a white female assault victim battered and on crutches at a police station. She was asked to identify her attacker out of a lineup of five black men and a goat. Now, the culprit was the goat named Felicia, and it says, "You better not snitch on a player," is what the goat says. She kind of gets scared, and the male voice says, "Snitches get stitches. Keep your mouth shut," is what the goat says. Now, after all of that, the victim increasingly gets nervous, and the victim finally tells the detective, who was holding a bottle of Mountain Dew, that she can't identify her assailant and hobbles off on her crutches screaming, "No, no." And the officer takes a gulp of the soda and says, "She got to do it," just before the tagline, "Do it," appears on the screen with the goat's face. Now, the ad was a part of a series developed by an African-American rapper. See, I don't even want to say his name, really. But it's Tyler, the Creator, whoever that cat is. He directed it. So it's not a black-on-black. It kind of is a black-on-black crime, but Pepsi dropped it, and they dismissed the ad, and they just wasn't down for it. So I'll go with Kai first on this. Kai, what do you think about that?
I need to talk to Tyler and his creation. You know, I'm going to try and give him a pass because he's a young guy, and perhaps he hasn't been taught. I think he's like 22 or something like that. And he may not know better, you know. So I'm going to request to talk to Tyler and say, "Tyler, what the hell, what were you thinking?" But, you know, kudos to Pepsi for taking the initiative. You know, I respect his creative expression, but not at the expense of other people. My question is, how did it get so far along before they decided to pull the ad? Somewhere between the creation of Tyler and the airing of the commercial, why did someone not say, "That's just not a good idea"? I just don't understand that. But, you know, I was livid at first, and I read up on Tyler, and he needs a little guidance.
He needs
Call
help.
Call me, Tyler. We can talk.
You can just say it. He needs help. All
he
right.
Needs a little
commissioner.
Help.
Okay, commissioner. We'll let the commissioner go because I know – Vanessa's probably going to tear this up. Commissioner, what do you think about this?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go after Finesse.
Okay. All right. Well,
let me jump in right quick.
No, I'm going to go to you next, Daniel, because I don't trust either one of them the way, you know, the commissioner said that. I can't trust her, so I'm going to have to go. We have to keep it mellow first and go with Daniel. Daniel, what do you think about this?
First of all, I think some of these advertisers know that it's pushing the envelope, but for whatever their little hidden agendas are, they're going to see if it'll pass. Because I don't think the Rick Ross deal, I mean, that was kind of another thing. Okay, you're picking a guy whose rap lyrics are controversial. I mean, that's a nice way of putting it. And then you have this kid pushing a stereotype at a time when everybody's sensitive to these kinds of things. So for them to allow it to get that far, I think it's their fault. I mean, you can give him creative expression, but somewhere along the line of Mountain Dew, your people have to say, "No, I don't think we want to go that route."
Right, right.
So I think it's their fault, and then they just gave him a little too much rope, and he hung himself.
All right, Finesse, you're up.
I'm going to break this down because there's three parts of this. I'm going to answer Kai's question, how did it get out there? The commercial was originally made for social media only. And the reason why I think that was because if it had been on TV, it would have been pulled and wouldn't have got as many views as they wanted. So it only was for social media only. And the only reason why Mountain Dew pulled the commercial because they started getting pressure because they hadn't, I forgot how many views they had before they even pulled it. Secondly, Tyler gets no pass because I don't care. At some point, you got to know something is ignorant, and we can't keep selling out for money. And he sold out for money. I can't even get mad at Mountain Dew or PepsiCo, and they always do this like Daniel said. They know what they're getting into. They know what they're going to get. But it's an easy pass for them to say. So when Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton or somebody says, oh, this is offensive and it's racist. See, now we can't say that because PepsiCo will say, well, wait a minute. One of your black brothers or your black sisters, they made this television program or they made this commercial. Why are you getting mad at us? They did it. So this is what we're stuck between, a rock and a hard place, because there has to be some education along the line. Tyler does not get a pass, and then to hear his comments later on makes me want to go chase him down and give him a history lesson. But I'll digress for now, but he doesn't get a pass. I can't be mad at PepsiCo, and we need better education, understanding. And that's one of the reasons why we're talking about media and the media images that are put out there today.
Okay, and you know I'm going to get to those comments in a second, but before I do that, Commissioner Kathleen, you're up.
Thank you. I actually did not want to give, and I'm sorry for the noise, I'm going to close my window. I actually did not want to give Tyler a pass either. I know he's 22. I think you guys just said he was 22, but I don't know. I'm having difficulty giving him a pass. I also do think that a lot of these companies, all right, you give me a multi-million-dollar, maybe billion-dollar company like PepsiCo and tell me that I'm going to put my advertising and the risk of my market share and everything else in the hands of a 22-year-old kid, and I'm not going to let anybody in my company with brains enough to know who's been watching over all of my marketing and everything for years and years and years and years, and I'm going to just take them all off of the job, close your eyes, we got a black kid doing it, so no scrutiny necessary, and just let it go out there. And I don't have anybody else with brains enough at PepsiCo to tell me that this is racist. I'm not buying it. I believe what Vanessa is just saying, that you know, they had a particular market that they were going after. They, especially if you put it out on social media, you can do so much more than you can on television or on radio. Mm-hmm. And I think they just wanted to slide it in there, get some views, have it go viral, and, you know, make whatever money they could make off of it before they had to pull it, if they were going to have to pull it.
Okay, now, I wouldn't give them that much credit because I don't think they're that smart. I think what happens is that when you don't have any black people around you, you say, hey, let's get some hot kid and let's try to get the youth involved and make it hot on the streets.
But well, see, they are, because that's the whole plan. That's why it used to be a white person that would go do it, and then we start screaming, so then they flipped it, and they say, go get somebody else.
No,
they know exactly what they're doing.
I think oppression and brainwashing just kind of works like it works. And like I said, when we get back and we bring author Clinton Galley on, we're going to talk about how media and politics play in business as well. So let me go to his comments. This is Tyler's comments. He said, I guess people are claiming that it's racist, which, you know, that wasn't even portrayed in the commercial. There is no type of hate being portrayed in that work. He called it work of art. In that work of art at all, which I am confused by. He said, but this older black dude, Dr. Boyce Watkins, I guess he found it racist because I was portraying stereotypes, which is ridiculous because one of those dudes in the lineup were my friends. He said all of those dudes in the lineup were my friends. That was his comment, Finesse. You can have at that.
I mean, and he also said that one of his other comments that added to that was he said he's going to do more commercials and he's not going to change. Well, he needs a history lesson, and somebody needs to get at him and said, this is why this commercial, you shouldn't have did this commercial. But he knows what he's doing. He's figuring, well, I'm getting $100,000. I'm going to do this so I can keep getting fed. the advertising agencies, the companies, they know. I mean, black folks spend $800+ billion a year, so they know they need to target us. And what better way for to target us than to let we give this kid some crumbs? He's going to give us the commercial we want. That way, we don't. If it's wrong, we can shift blame to him, and we don't have to finger ourselves. So they know what they're doing. They're very smart. And releasing it on social media got more views probably than if it was on TV, because it probably would have been some TV companies, television stations would have rejected it before it even got on the air. But this is the way they circumvent it, by releasing it through social media.
I think everybody's giving that kid way too much credit. I think when you're young, you don't see the bigger picture on how media impacts. So when we as adults kind of see the world and look at those commercials that's going out to the broader media, he thinks that he's entertaining his friends. Just like he said, you know, I don't think it's racist because it's my friends. Like, he doesn't honestly understand the impact of media and how that affects everybody's community, and why we have the little racist stuff that happens in politics, why we have racist stuff happen in corporate, why you have racist stuff happen at your grocery store, is because if they keep seeing crazy images of some white woman on crutches have to pick between five black people and a goat, like, there is an implied thing right there that there could not be anybody else but them fools.
And you know what comes to mind? The old saying, just based on his reply, it's better to be assumed ignorant than to open one's mouth and remove all doubt.
And
his
reply
made it even more obvious that he's just not educated in a lot of areas. And you're right, Finesse. He needs a history lesson, and he needs a little scolding, and he needs a little humbling, you know.
Right.
Because, again, I can't blame it on all young people, because young people, some of them get it. He clearly is a young man who just still doesn't get it.
And I'm sorry, as a young black man in America, he gets it, because how many times has he probably been pulled over or asked and accused of something that he didn't do for being black?
Yeah,
so
but
that
simple
me, he can't
reply,
get a pass.
That reply alone, some old dude, and, you know, my friends in the video, that sounds like a very immature response,
You didn't see through that old dude comment.
No, because for
the simple reason he's black, I'm quite sure cops have pulled him over for stuff he didn't do. If you black and you 5 years old or enough, you get accused of things you didn't do. So, no, he doesn't get a pass on that. I understand what you're saying, but he don't get a pass on that.
Okay, but
with
age comes
wisdom. He needs to go back to the lab.
Oh,
right,
no doubt.
Because
and like I said, somebody needs to get at him and give him education. But it's going to be
hard. We're getting at him now.
Well,
we're getting at him now.
Where's Tyler Perry?
I'd like to have him sit in a room with Dick Gregory. Thanks.
That's right.
Because we're not paying him. So if Pepsi come to him with $200,000 and we coming at him in knowledge, who you think he's going to listen to?
And
honestly,
Pepsi better
left.
Stop playing too, because we keep giving Pepsi a pass. And,
okay, I'm giving Pepsi a pass. I'm drinking Pepsi right now.
I mean,
no, this is Dr. Pepper. Go ahead.
You know,
Pepsi
and a lot of the other huge organizations better stop taking us for granted, because we keep forgiving them and we keep giving them passes. And,
speaking
of
that,
has
Daniel,
power.
Daniel, did you want to jump in? I thought.
No, I was just saying he needs to have a sit down with Dick Gregory. He wants a history lesson. You know, a brother who play in front of white audiences and made them laugh, and it took a certain amount of knowledge, showmanship, skills, comedic ability to do that at the time he did, and have this kid understand that, look, this is where we come from, and don't perpetuate a stereotype that's being pushed in the media just to get your paper.
Right.
You know, be responsible.
But this is what we've done. Just generally across the board, when you talk about one of our earlier shows where we talked about the Jay-Z Russell Simmons thing, where Jay-Z made a statement about Occupy Wall Street, and Russell Simmons came out with an open letter to Jay-Z. Like, it was like we kind of check ourselves as we go. If you get too disconnected from the bigger picture, it is our responsibility as a community to kind of kick you back into the fold, because you can start smelling yourself or feeling like you're sitting in the big house when that happens. And I can't really blame corporations for pushing a stereotype when the stereotype is pushing the stereotype, right? And so if they go at a stereotype and then he pushes the same stereotype, they're going to distance themselves when people like me who drink nothing but Pepsi stop drinking Pepsi. So I don't play when it really comes down to when I spend my money. Now,
well,
that will make Pepsi move.
Just like Kai said, we spend a lot of dollars, and we need to get behind our dollars, and she's exactly right. And like I said before, these companies know exactly what they're doing. They're very calculated. Well, this way, this shifts the blame from them, and they're not losing any money because they're going to say, we didn't make it. One of y'all made it.
But we're taking the personal responsibility to tell you that you don't have to be an agent for somebody else. Now, PepsiCo also said in a statement this week that Lil Wayne's offensive reference to Emmett Till does not reflect our brand, and it declined to provide any further comment, but they did drop Lil Wayne. Mountain Dew actually severed ties with Lil Wayne. But Pepsi, as the parent company, came up.
Look how many months after how many sales that
I can't blame them.
They took their sweet time, and after they got the sales, and then they said, oh, you know what, let's drop Lil Wayne.
No. They were sponsoring his concert stuff.
They were promotional.
As a former Lil Wayne fan, used to be
really?
A fan. Yeah, I actually like Lil Wayne, but he should know better. There are just some boundaries you do not cross, and he's been in the industry long enough to know. You know, as a writer, I could have thought of 50 different ways to use that line. It was inappropriate, but still. I could have thought of 50 different. I mean, and my niece is 15. She could have. He knew full well what he was doing. If he would stop sipping on the scissorp or whatever he's sipping on and get back to his real creative talent, he would know. There are just certain boundaries you do not cross. And, you know, Tyler is a little younger, so I'm giving him a half a pass. But Lil Wayne gets no pass ever, never, no way, because he knows better. And, you know, in his non-altered state, he should know
he
better.
He may know better. Now, okay, so Lil Wayne did release his response to the family, and here is what it said. It said, "Dear Till family, as a recording artist, I have always been interested in wordplay. My lyrics often reference people, places, and events in my music, as well as the music that I create for and alongside of other artists. It has come to my attention that the lyrics from my contribution to a fellow artist's song has deeply offended your family. As a father myself, I can't imagine the pain that your family has had to endure. I would like to take a moment to acknowledge your hurt as well as the letter you sent me via my attorneys. Moving forward, I will not use or reference Emmett Till or the Till family in my music, especially in an inappropriate manner. I fully support Epic Records' decision to take it down, the unauthorized version of the song, and not to include any reference to any version that went to retail. I will not be performing the lyrics that contain the reference live, and it's been removed from my catalog." He said,
He's got a great PR person, boy. They wrote that.
That's why I kept reading it, because he's never spoken five words.
He can't
black on black
three
crime.
Sentences. And he rhymes in Dr. Seuss. Who believes he wrote that letter?
Yeah.
Wait.
And Rome, what is my reply, Rome? Don't nobody want to hear that crap.
I knew where Kai was going. I was going to bring you on because this was done. Because Kai is nothing but garbage. Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
Because that's all you heard was the teacher from Charlie Brown.
That's right. Ain't nobody trying to hear that, Lil Wayne. You shouldn't have used it in the first place.
Wait.
Who do they think actually believes that? I don't even want to hear no more because I'm already like, what? Because
this is how your PR person is supposed to roll. We talked about this last time when you said somebody should use their
PR
people.
I ain't gonna lie. If I got a client like Lil Wayne, I ain't gonna put together some fabricated autobiography lie.
Yeah,
that
sound like it came from Sidney Poitier's like PR person. Like, it's,
but can I be the PR person for the Till family?
I'm sorry, that is a black on black crime, but I had to say that.
Can I be the PR person for the Till family and say Don't nobody want to hear that.
Oh, right.
So wait a minute. On top of that, the song's been out since December.
Yeah.
And now he's just putting out, come on, man. He already made money off the record. You know, the Pepsi company or Seven
right.
Up or whoever is was supporting him. They
and you know
money.
What?
I don't
if he wants to show real remorse, donate some of the profits he made from that record, donate them to Center for Nonviolence or something that teaches tolerance. He's
Wait,
a millionaire.
Yeah.
He's got it.
I'm
you
sorry,
know?
Finesse and Kai, but you have to hear the end of this. He said, as a
oh,
business
Lord,
owner who employs several African-American employees and gives philanthropically to organizations that help youth to pursue their dreams.
I can't even spell that word. I know he can.
My ultimate intention is to uplift rather than degrade our community.
Oh.
Dwayne Michael Carter Jr.
Oh, oh whatever.
I threw up a little in my mouth.
Isn't this the credit card guy? He would uplift. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, uplift rather than degrade our community. He's not going to pull up his pants or anything, but
that's
he want to uplift.
Please give me a flag.
He would have just been better off saying, I don't really have anything to say about that.
Why can't he just say, I apologize, I wasn't thinking, and I try to be better the next time? I would believe that versus he can't even spell some of the words that's in that letter.
He lost his Mountain Dew endorsement. That's where the professional PR person came in. Now,
so
the Teal family.
He and Mountain Dew already made money. From December on, today is May. They just put out this ridiculous statement in May. So from December to May, they made that money. I tell you what, give the Till family some money.
That's what
hey,
I...
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
You want to make
both
it right, donate some money.
Not
he got
donate,
it.
Donate, give it to them. I don't
philanthropic.
Don't need to
be
nonprofit.
To be more philanthropic.
Yeah, exactly.
He can't even spell
now,
that. You know he can't spell that word.
The Till family said in a letter that it fell short of an apology.
Mm-hmm.
They said, it's mind-boggling to me that they partnered with him in the first place.
It's mind-boggling to us, too, because we don't understand what the word they were talking about.
Reverend Wheeler Parker Jr., a cousin of Teal, and a witness to his abduction, said major corporations should scrutinize who they endorse. Don't let greed and money determine who you sponsor. That was another.
There you go. In other words, ain't nobody on his crap.
There you go. And don't nobody want to hear that.
Lil Wayne,
exactly.
You wouldn't let Lil Wayne sit on your board of directors. Don't use him as a spokesperson for your brand.
Exactly.
But you know what? We can say whatever we want to the next company to come along. If he can make them money, because they'll go look at the books from Mountain Dew at the end of the year and see how much they made, and they'll be like, we'll take a chance on him if he says something stupid, or we'll just get Tyler, the Creator, to write a commercial, and then we'll cancel both those suckers out. So, I mean, it's crazy.
Okay, you know, that's what I'm going to use for Finesse every time he starts getting into it. He needs to breathe.
No, I need to play open letter. You don't need to play open letter.
Yeah, I told you I have open letters. I just want to let everyone know, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We did get a couple of breaks in there, but we're going to take a break and come back with more Black on Black Crime. Our main topic we're going to talk about is Kobe Bryant versus his mama. I think it's the wrong topic, but we're going to talk about it.
Hey, Effrey.
Yes, sir?
After that letter from Lil Wayne, I would like to see him on the show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Oh, sounds good. Do I have to play this again? All right, we'll be back. And let me put Finesse on mute. We'll be back right after this message, all right? Stay with us. Black on Black Crime.
We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We're going to beat them and bust them.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
Let's get a little bit rowdy. R-O-W-D-Y.
Take time to be a dad today. Call or visit fatherhood.gov to learn more.
Welcome to Esprinet News. 90-second news break.
Virgin Airlines has a new gimmick that lets you buy a fellow passenger a drink, allowing for full in-flight flirting. The service lets flyers locate a passenger via a digital seat map, then, with the touch of a button, send service. A flight attendant delivers the food or drink directly to the passenger's seat. They can even follow up with a gesture of an online chat. Legendary U.S. investor Warren Buffett has joined Twitter and could become one of Twitter's most followed. Within 10 minutes of signing up, 10,000 were following him. Within 3 hours, the number increased past 140,000. Marijuana in a pill may work even better as a pain reliever than the smoked form, with fewer harmful side effects. According to new research, the drug is commonly used by patients suffering from cancer, multiple sclerosis, and other painful conditions. Chris Kelly of the 90s hip-hop group Crisscross has passed away at age 34. Kelly, known as Mac Daddy, performed alongside Chris Smith, known as Daddy Mac. Their debut album, Totally Crossed Out, sold over 4 million copies in the U.S. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for EspritNet News on ACN.
The sound that shattered barriers, shaped our lives, and made us all move together comes to Broadway in Motown, the musical. The real story of how founder Berry Gordy and the whole Motown family created a soundtrack that changed America. The beat of a generation, the soul of a nation. Get ready, because here it comes. Motown, the musical. Previews begin March 11th.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. You can call in and join us at area code 909-265-9189. We're on right now with Finesse. We got Kai, author and columnist Kai Sims. We have our commissioner and also another author, Kathleen Williams. Hey, Kai. Hey, Kathleen. And we also have Daniel on. What's up, Daniel?
What's going on, folks?
All right, so we did a little roll call, but I think Finesse is still here. Finesse, how you doing, man? You calmed down yet?
I'm calmed down. I'm good.
Okay. All right. Now, our main black-on-black crime that I want to talk about today is NBA star Kobe Bryant versus his mother, Pamela Bryant. Now, if you don't know, Kobe Bryant is in a court battle trying to keep his mother from auctioning off his mementos from his high school days in Pennsylvania and his early years with the L.A. Lakers. In this case, the 900 mementos happen to be worth upwardly of $1.5 million amongst the first 100 or so items Pam Bryant intends to sell. His jersey, his NBA jersey, the practice gear, sweatsuits from high school, his varsity letters, trophies, outstanding player, his 2000 NBA championship basketball that's assigned to basketball, and there were rings, his NBA championship rings. The team bought his mother and father rings also, and she's selling those. Now, she got paid upward of $450,000 up front, which she intended for her new home in Nevada. She's moving, so she wanted to sell the item. So Pam Bryant told the auction house that she asked her son 5 years ago if he what he wanted to do with the items in her home, and Kobe indicated to her that the items belonged to her and that she had no interest in them. The auction attorney said she put them in a $1,500 a month New Jersey storage unit, and then she decided to sell them. Okay, so let's go with Kai first on this one. Kai, what do you think about Pamela Bryant's decision to sell his stuff?
I think if they were so valuable to him, he should have taken them. I hope she consulted with him prior to selling them, but, I mean, if he was willing to take over the storage fee or take over, you know, I don't understand. Is this, like, something that's sentimental to him? Why does he think that she should be responsible for his memorabilia unless he, in fact, did give it to her? what is the purpose of this argument? Is it over money, or is it just over his ego, or what? I don't understand it. If he left them there, they couldn't have been of too much value if he left them with her. I say she should sell them. But hopefully she gave him the courtesy of contacting him first. If he didn't come and get them, then, hey, she should sell them. Apparently they don't mean that much to her.
All right, let's go to Daniel. See, Kai is not a Kobe fan, so you got to really watch out for me and Kai on this one. Daniel, go ahead.
Well, I'd have a problem with my mother selling my stuff if she didn't speak to me first.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that's your mom, too. So with the many millions of dollars you got, I mean, it's kind of just like, okay, is it really that serious? But I think just out of respect, I would want my mom to at least kind of give me a heads up. It still is kind of one of those deals when people get to have so much money, family somehow or another gets washed away, and you just lose a simple respect for one another. And I just think a respect factor was missing in the whole ball of wax, if you ask me.
Okay, Kathleen, do you have anything on that?
Oh, boy, do I ever. But I need to know, so can I speak freely, or do I have to be commissioner and not commit any black-on-black crimes?
You can speak
freely. I want
freely,
you to do me. Channel your inner finesse.
Don't be finesse, but speak freely.
Okay, so first of all that, with the exception of maybe his NBA rings and everything else, all that stuff, mama paid for. So,
true that.
You know, so how dare he in the first place? And you let me take my mother into a court of law and tell her she can't sell something of mine. My mother has passed away, and I still wouldn't do it. Because if I thought that she thought that I was going to take her into a court of law and have this in the news, oh, my God.
We would be talking beat down.
Mm-hmm. Hello, from the grave, from beyond. So I wouldn't even try it. So the audacity, when I looked online and saw that he was actually taking his mother to court, I wanted to get spanking. I wanted to go after him. But anyway, no, she has the absolute right to sell it. I really do believe that she probably did ask him and say, boy, come get this stuff or I'm getting rid of it. And he just left it
there. She's moving.
Yeah.
Right. So she's in Jersey. She says she's moving.
She said that she probably said this to him some eons ago and left it there thinking he's Kobe Bryant. He'd get it when he wants to, if he wants to. His wife don't want all that stuff in the house. What's he going to do with it anyway?
His wife don't want it in the house.
It's been in a storage unit all that time, so let his mama take care of it. And, she's like, look, boy, come get this stuff or whatever. And when she finally decided to sell it, he's going to come out like this? Mm-mm.
Okay,
finesse. He ain't learned his lesson yet.
Well, digging deeper into the story, like you said, she told him she's looking to buy a new house. She told him to come get the stuff. He didn't get the stuff. She had it appraised, I believe, at $400,000. And Kobe offered his mother $250,000 not to sell the stuff. So you didn't come get it. You didn't come drop off a check. So she's selling your stuff. End of story.
And why is she buying a house? Why isn't he buying his mother a house?
See, that would be a whole other story.
That's what I
want
to
know. That's a whole other Kobe issue.
And that would be a whole other story on why it's getting sold as well.
Exactly.
Because
my initial response was, if he would have paid the storage fees, I don't think she would have had a reason to sell.
That's right. Why did she have to
do it in the trash?
She'd
have been mad.
Kobe.
He could have.
He's only offering $250,000. The other guy's offering her $400,000. Which one would you go with?
There you go.
He
the son would have
mama.
To get over it.
Wait, is that a black-on-black crime to undercut your mama? Like, I ain't know that part.
Yes, it is. It's a crime to all humanity to undercut
it
your
is.
Mama.
I didn't say what I was going to say and ask you whether or not his mother's black.
Yeah, she black. That's a crime. We're going to let you get away with that one. I'm going to hold that one until the next time I get in trouble.
Oh, see, he needs to use that against you.
And she's a beautiful woman. I mean, she's but really, Kobe, get over yourself. Ugh.
They didn't speak for about 4 or 5 years, if I remember, into the league, and they were having problems.
When he met
because,
his wife? Just joking.
Yep. No, she didn't like his wife and didn't encourage him to get married.
All right,
he's
y'all
young.
Y'all going into charted waters.
Exactly. Let me pull back because we don't commit black-on-black crimes on purpose. We commit them, but we don't do them on purpose.
Just making
and
an
by the way,
well, he got to have a wife in order. He got to have one a wife in order to commit the black-on-black crime. With that.
All right, see. All right, and there's such a thing as a justified black-on-black crime. I think I better let the audience know that while we're going on at the show. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. Our dial number is 909-265-9189. Before I let Finesse finish up here, we are going to take a break in a minute and then come back.
I guess someone caught that one.
I did.
I didn't catch it, and I should have put him on mute, and that's going to be my fault to the listening audience. All right, you can join us, 909-265-9189. Get Finesse.
His mama's black, but I don't know about anybody else.
Okay, hold on. Finesse, did you say something?
I said his
mama. See, I just muted him. See how that goes? I just wanted to talk to let y'all know I was muting him.
Oh!
Yeah. Jake, roll.
See, Finesse, I'm going to have to stop tearing up the show.
Oh,
right,
I'm hoping Kathleen asked the question, so I'll answer it. The mother is black, but we don't know about anybody else in the family, including Kobe. Anyway.
Oh, God. All right. Send your comments to Finesse, because we're not even taking our comments from here today. Now, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We are coming up at the top of the hour with author Clinton Galloway to discuss media and politics in his book, Anatomy of a Hustle, How Cable TV Came to South Central Los Angeles. And so we'll have him on in a moment. But I'm going to give Daniel a chance to chime in here because I know you get a chance to laugh at Finesse every now and then, but Daniel, bring us back to sanity on Black Crime. What do you think about his mother and this whole Kobe mess? Now, I'm not a Kobe fan. I have to say that. So.
Well, my bottom line is respect for one another. I mean, in anything we do in this world, especially amongst our family, we got to respect one another. And that, I mean, if that was truly a gift to her, you don't re-gift something, especially sell it, when it has that type of value. I just don't understand how when we get up and we start making a little money and famous, some things are petty, and sometimes we do things that you normally wouldn't do. I mean, would you sell something that your child gave, or even if you're if someone needs something, would you sell it? I mean, I
don't think she's selling everything. I think she's only selling some of the stuff.
She's selling some of the stuff.
That's been in
another sentimental.
I would rather her say, "Look, Kobe, I'd like to. You know, your mother's mama looking for a house. You know, I'd like to find something. Can you help me out with? You know, can you buy your mama a house?" I would sort of rather her do that than to say, okay, I'm going to sell your high school jersey and this, that, and the other. It just reeks to high heaven to me. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, but he only offered her $250,000. That's a slap in the
only
face.
Only $250,000.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, why is she paying for his storage? Why is she, if he didn't
she
give
paying,
it. Yeah, why is she paying $1,500 for storage for his stuff? It's like she's babysitting his stuff.
And
either
about
he should
this.
Get it or he should give it to her. It's either one
Wait
or the minute. Other.
And how many years has she been paying $1,500
exactly.
a month in
She's
storage?
She's already paid for the house. Or
exactly.
here's a solution. Buy her a house big enough with a room to store all of his memorabilia.
Or here's another solution. She can call me. I come get the stuff for free. Then I sell it.
Okay, and that would be Finesse, ladies and gentlemen. We know where this is going.
Call me, Ms. Bryant, and I'm black, Ms. Bryant. Call me.
Committing black on black crime all day.
Flag on commit. On the play.
What?
Flag on the play.
Wait a minute, am I black? I didn't say Kobe White. I said me.
Okay, see, if we keep throwing flags on Finesse, he would have a flag as big as the original one, Betsy Ross. kind of slow, so we
I'm
can't
not, I'm not understanding
black,
the flag. I said I'm black. That's the only thing I said. I ain't saying nothing about Kobe White.
Okay, and we're questioning your blackness at this moment. So he's about to get put on mute, and we'll be back. This is Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome, with Finesse, Kai, Kathleen, and Daniel. We'll be back after this message.
Starting Sunday, this coming Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a new show called Professional Style, where we talk about singles, professionals, parents, travel, lifestyle, and living. If you are a professional, if you're a single, you're a parent, or whatever your status in life, Professional Style, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on Ask Kathleen Network.
This is a story about BK from BK. Bernard King from Brooklyn, New York. It's 1984. The garden is packed, and I'm sitting in the last row. I mean, I could touch the roof. And Bernard King, he was giving an inch to business. 10, 20, 40 points. Second half, 50, 60 points. He was stopping and popping, posted and toasted. All hail the king. And you know what? You never know who's going to wear the crown next.
Look at these pictures. Okay, your hair was so beautiful last night. What did you do?
I stopped using some heat. So I set my hair with wraps that mousse. It makes my hair look so rich. And then I finished with gloss and polisher so I don't frizz on the dance floor. And I'm good to go.
It's still looking good today.
Well, we all look good.
Yeah. Ladies, we had a blast.
Yeah.
Organic Root Stimulator, nature's secret to healthier style hair.
Introducing the all-new 2013 Nissan Pathfinder. Hi. It seats 7. Hi. Or 2. And with a 13-speaker Bose sound system and newly redesigned exterior, you'll go everywhere in style.
Hi.
And Pathfinder's tri-zone entertainment system.
My movie just ended.
Ours too.
Keeps everyone entertained. The all-new Nissan Pathfinder. It's our most innovative Pathfinder ever.
Straight from Red Lobster Chef to your table for a limited time. It's our seafood dinner for two for just $25. A handcrafted seafood feast made to share. First, you each get salad and unlimited Cheddar Bay biscuits. Then choose two from a wide variety of chef-inspired entrees, like our new honey garlic crispy shrimp or new seafood lover's linguine. Round out your seafood dinner with your choice of either an appetizer or dessert to share. Don't miss our seafood dinner for two, just $25. At Red Lobster, where we seafood differently.
Dove Men Plus Care presents How to Stay in Shape. Step 1. Gotta work those arms.
How was it?
Good. Step 2. Keep those legs strong. And Step 3. Don't forget your back. Dove Men Plus Care. Care for what matters.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. I don't know why I'm hesitating at the moment. We're on with Finesse, Kai, got Kathleen and Daniel in the queue. But before we go on to Black on Black Crime, we have an author, Clinton Calloway, coming on. We're going to discuss media and politics in his book, Anatomy of a Hustle, How Cable Television Came to South Central Los Angeles. Now, if you're not familiar with the book, it came out in October 2012, Anatomy of a Hustle, tells a story about Clinton and his brother, Dr. Carl Galloway, as they entered into a bidding process to be awarded the cable television rights in South Central LA. Their bid was derailed by the corruption that prevailed in the LA's mayor's office and the city council members. Of all of the bidding groups, the Galloway Group had the financing to build a system, but they were denied. So I just want to give you a synopsis of it and bring on Well, let's bring on Finesse.
I think what we've talked about in the past on this show, you've talked about media, blacks in the media, representation and ownership. And we've seen so many things happen as far as, you know, a bunch of blacks being divided and having their, buying their own networks instead of working together, or the thing that happened with Michael Bazin. And this is kind of, well, it's not kind of, it's a history lesson. I remember being very young and hearing this story, and it's something we didn't even discuss when I got to college, but coming out and doing some background on it, this is the history really that takes off of black-owned media and black ownership. And it's a very powerful book, and I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Clinton E. Galloway. Thank you so much for taking time out to be on Black Crime.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you can, give some background as to what led up to you and your brother essentially going to war on trying to get this cable station.
Well, I'm glad you understand that it is a war. When the citizens have to fight a government, it is a war. What happened was this. In 1979, my brother, who was a very, very bright guy and, you know, technically a genius because he had one of those 150-something IQs, way from where I am, but he came to me and said, hey, you know, this whole thing of cable television, he had met some of the people who were in the cable television industry, and he had met the owners of the people who were building the franchise right next to the one we would saw it. He said, cable's going to become the new newspaper and become a powerful tool in communication. When he said this, I said, well, you know, how do we get involved? He explained that no one, there was an area called South Central Los Angeles, and no one wanted to bid for it. No one wanted to seek the license for it, and no one wanted to build it. When we went to the city and approached them, they said, well, no one wants to build it because the people there are too poor to afford cable. We disagreed and thought that it was something that was necessary for our community to grow and to have the access to the information and the technology that was becoming commonplace in America at that point. We went down to City Hall, and we were directed, well, you're going to need to go through a bureaucratic process, and they assigned us, they said, well, go see this Councilman Farrell, who was a black councilman. He said, he'll be able to help you go through the process. Since no one else wanted it, we assumed that everybody would be happy that we showed up. The second time my brother showed up at the place, the councilman's deputy took him over to the councilman's attorney's office, and they together said that if you give us two-thirds of your company, we'll let you do business in this city. And that clearly wasn't acceptable to me or to my brother. And so we decided, well, we'll pursue this on our own, and we'll go through the process. They proceeded to go through an entire process of 3 years, asking us about money, asking us about technical ability. And when they came up with nothing else, they simply started changing the rules. And they changed the rules and said, well, we want your money to all be up front. We want you to have $40 million in the bank up front before we'll even consider you having a license. This was completely different than every other franchise that had been awarded in this city. There was only one franchise left to be awarded, and that was South Central. They wanted to completely change the rules. They wanted new systems, new this, new that. It was all just a subterfuge to say, if you pay our friends the two-thirds of your company that we've asked of you, we'll give it to you. We didn't believe they had the power to do it. We didn't, you know, we just said, hey, we don't think you're powerful enough to overrun us like this. But then again, they brought in the mayor of the city of Los Angeles. They brought in Tom Bradley. He sat us all down. He said, this is the deal that you're going to do, or you're not going to do business here in the city of Los Angeles. We were obviously astounded to have a man of his standing, who we had heard about for so many years, give us a threat like this. To think that he was on the street or some gangster and he could threaten us and tell us to give us his company, you know, take our business and make it his own. And it wasn't going to work. So we pursued it. We went through the entire process with the city. And after 3 years, they said, well, you know, we've decided we're not going to let you have it. 2 months before, they had awarded two other franchises, one in the Latin area, one in the white area. When it came to the black area, they had been segregated out, and they were not going to do it. So we simply said, well, if you're not going to, you know, you've told us you're not going to do it. They said, well, you can come back and rebid again for the next bidding franchise. We said, we'd be crazy to do that. You've already shown us what you're going to do. We came up with money from three different sources, including the richest man in the world backing us. That was not good enough for him. When the richest man in the world is not good enough for your backing, then that's telling you, whatever you do, we're not going to allow it to happen. And when people speak of black-on-black crime, the black crime being committed by politicians against the citizens is one of the most deadly forms of criminal activity that I have seen. Forget the gangs. You better watch these politicians.
Wow. And I want to go back a second so that the listeners know.
you and your brother were just not some guys sitting in the room and came up with this idea. You guys were actually professionals and had money.
Absolutely, absolutely. My brother was a doctor, and he was practicing in South Central. I was a CPA, and I was currently working for a Beverly Hills investment banking firm, underwriting the same securities that we were trying to use, you know, that were being used to finance cable television. So we both had very high backgrounds educationally. He was a doctor. I was in the finance business. And we had the ability to do this because we came from those sort of trainings. One of the things we were concerned about was the information that goes into our community, not just entertainment. There's plenty of people who do entertainment. Poverty is an economic condition. Unless we address the economic issues that create poverty, we cannot alleviate the poverty that exists in the community. The medical situation, AIDS was an epidemic at this point, yet no information was being allowed in our communities to try to stop or slow down the growth of AIDS and how fast it was pursuing in the black community. This was done because we did not control any media, and the media that was controlled was not concerned about South Central. And that's what we found out.
Well, I want to ask, Vanessa, along with the media, and I want to talk more about the politics. I'm not sure that you know that I'm a political strategist by profession. And the issue is that we all know as people of color that we're always locked out of the backroom conversations generally. And then there are those people who are in place that actually hold us down. So I want you to talk to us about your effort to go to the Supreme Court with your case and how long that took.
Well, it became almost imperative that we seek protection from somebody other than a local government. We had gone to the Attorney General of the state, the district attorney here in Los Angeles, and we had talked to the Attorney General of the United States. The only protection, which has been historically the protection for people of color, when local governments exceed their authority and violate their constitutional rights, you go to federal court to seek protection. And that's what we were seeking, protection from a bunch of thugs and gangsters who were running City Hall. We were assigned to a judge by the name of Consuela Marshall, a black U.S. federal judge who was appointed with the assistance of Mayor Tom Bradley. She was friends with Tom Bradley and Johnny Cochran, who was Tom Bradley's right-hand man. We filed our case in 1983 against the city seeking protection because their law was unconstitutional. And it was very simply unconstitutional for the same reason you see newspapers on a corner, you see 10 newspapers on a corner, because it's a right-of-way, it's a public right-of-way. The public has a right to use that unless there's some overriding concern that it shouldn't. Cable is run along poles that are owned by the public. The public has paid for these poles. It's a public right-of-way. We felt that we had a right to go in and utilize these public right-of-ways just as anyone else would. But they were saying that, no, you don't have a right, that your constitutional rights do not exist here in Los Angeles. So when the judge, we had the case before the judge in 1983. It lasted about 45 days in front of her, and she dismissed the case, and we appealed it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which overruled her and said that clearly this is a First Amendment issue. If there's room on the polls, you must allow a second company to come in and build a system. There was nobody building a system even then when we went through this process. The city appealed the case up to the United States Supreme Court, and in 1986, we went to the United States Supreme Court, and our case was heard and was ruled on in that same year by the Supreme Court in a 9-0 decision, a unanimous decision against the judge's perception that this wasn't a First Amendment issue and that we had no rights in the case. She didn't even allow us to go through an evidentiary hearing. So when the case was remanded back, it was remanded back again to the same judge, Consuela Marshall. She simply sat on the case for a period of almost 6 years and came out at the end in 1992 and said, well, yes, the Supreme Court was right, as if we needed her to tell us that the Supreme Court was right. That's why they're the Supreme Court and you're a district court judge. Thurgood Marshall had gotten involved in this and had spoken very eloquently that the city was so far out of line as for it to be ridiculous. So when you see the 9-0 verdict at the Supreme Court, it says one of two things. Either you're cheating or you're stupid. And I don't know which one she is, but I would tend to think she's probably some of both. So when they do this, they're saying that you have, our standing was basically, the court had said if there's room on the polls, they must be allowed to build. She simply held the case and refused to go to trial. We never got a trial in 10 years in court. And she finally at the end said, yes, you're right, they violated your rights for the last 10 years, but I'm going to give you $1. So that would turn out to be the value of a black man's rights in the city of Los Angeles for 10 years of violating my civil rights. We were allowed $1. Now, mind you, they spent $6.5 million to try to defend us against us. And they had to pay our attorneys another $1 million because they were the losers in a civil rights case. But they gave us $1. So that's what black people think of, that we're worth, $1. And that was an insult. It was an insult not only to me but to the entire race. We've worked hard to get what we got. Everybody's struggling. We give a lot of people who have to go out and work every day to make things happen. And we thought this was going to be something beneficial to the community. It gave the community a chance to talk between itself, not something that comes through Wall Street or comes through Hollywood, something that the community itself can do. There are plenty of people here, writers, directors, producers, actors, actresses, who can make programming. That was not our job. Our job was to create the infrastructure for them to deliver their programming.
What hurt more? Was it more white folks or white constituents that wanted to hold you back, or was it what you thought the black support you were going to get?
Clearly, the black element of politics and civil rights organizations here in Los Angeles, as well as throughout the entire nation. It was the black people who spent their time working against us. Two black councilmen, a federal judge, and a mayor, all black, fighting to keep financial investment from going into the poorest community in the country. How can that be? What sense does that make? That you're going to spend $10 million to keep us from investing $40 million in a place where unemployment is at 20%, incarceration rate is at 20%. This is as much unemployment as there is in people being incarcerated. It was an opportunity for us, for an entire community, to stand itself up and to start looking at what's important. Education has got to be important. Our health has got to be important. The economic development of our communities requires large sums of money to do it. We've got plenty of money to send around the world, but when it comes, they spend their money around South Central. They spend it fighting investment as opposed to doing it. The other thing that really hurt was, in all the years we were involved in this case, not one civil rights organization or civil rights spokesman, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, NAACP, Urban League, CORE, all of these, not one ever had a single word to say about the case. Now, to tell me that you can go to the United States Supreme Court regarding the rights of a 500,000 black people and you don't have a position, you don't have to agree with my position. You can disagree with it, but you must have a position if you claim to be serving the interests of that community. Therefore, there is no one serving our interests. And a recent study by Bob Johnson even supported that. He said, hey,
right.
Well, how many people believe that somebody supports or speaking for them? 40% of the black population said nobody speaks for us. The highest rated person was Al Sharpton. They said in terms of the NAACP, only 8% of the people believe the NAACP even spoke for black America anymore. We have no spokesperson. And the reason is we have no media. When you have no media, when you don't control the media, you can't control the content. And Rupert Murdoch said it best. He said, I would not be in content if I did not control the distribution, because the one who controls the distribution controls the content. And we see what content we get because we don't control the distribution. You know, it's a simple. If anyone wants to know what really happened in this case, simply go to Google and Google Preferred Communications versus the City of Los Angeles. There are 10 pages of references about what went on and about how the city was, even though they knew they were wrong as early as 1986, they still refused to change their law and continued to violate the constitutional rights of not only myself and my brother and the people with us, but the entire community. The entire community could not speak because they said we are the ones who would speak. Because they're afraid that if we come in, any other black people who they are not under their control, they're afraid they're going to be against them. And they were right in terms of us. When we saw what kind of dirt they were, we were obviously going to be against those kind of people leading our people to the next level. And it wasn't going to happen.
If you're listening to Black on Black Crime, we have a couple of panelists that want to ask a couple of questions. Is that okay?
That'd be great.
Okay. The first one is Attorney Kathleen Williams. We're all on the East Coast. We're in New York. And then it's going to be Kai Sims. She's another author out of Atlanta. So, Kathleen, you're up first.
Hi. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us here. I live in New York now, but I was actually in Los Angeles at the time that you are describing. Yeah, I was living there for about 10 years. I was working at Cedars-Sinai, between Cedars and Kaiser Permanente, during Tom Bradley's mayorship. And it's really wonderful that you have written this book, and I'm also glad that you bring it right back to, you know, the most important aspects of survival for black Americans in any city in this country, which is, you know, education, healthcare, and media. And obviously in Los Angeles, where media is king.
Exactly.
Exactly. media is king. Media is probably more important in Los Angeles than education and healthcare.
It is, because from Los Angeles, all the media forms. That's where they get the ideas and put it out there. It comes out of Los Angeles.
Period. That's it. That's it. And sometimes, now that I left L.A., moved to Ohio, and then came back to New York, and it doesn't seem like anywhere else in the country do people understand the significance of media. And to hear that this was happening right there, and I was right there and was not even aware of it, they were not only successful in pushing you out and gangster, just doing like mobster with you.
Like that.
They kept it silent so that people couldn't even get on board the train to help, fight it with
right.
you. A big part of
why they were able to keep it silent, because at that point they were making the transition from being a 2 or 3 newspaper town to a 1 newspaper town. The
right.
L.A. Times ended up being the last newspaper in town. The Herald Examiner went out of business. But the L.A. Times, no one realized, was one of the larger cable television companies in the country. At that point, they couldn't do anything in Los Angeles because there was the rule that said you cannot own a newspaper and a cable system in the same city. That's since changed with Rupert Murdoch, of course, but
mm-hmm.
at that point, L.A. Times was one of the larger cable companies in the country and did not want competition or anybody
mm-hmm.
stirring up the card. They wanted control, and they were not going to say anything about Tom Bradley because he was running for governor in that year. In 1982,
mm-hmm.
he was running for governor, and we had things that we had to say about him because it was clear that his attitude towards Black America was that you are just simply there to vote for me, and I don't have to give you anything or do anything for you. Which is exactly
atrocious.
What you see has happened in South Central.
Yeah, and I won't go on for long because I know everybody else wants to talk with you. But first of all, not only congratulations and
thank
you so much for staying in the fight, and thank you for bringing this out to our attention, because of course it is so much more important for us to be aware of this now, because as quiet as they want to keep this, it's not over. And it's vitally important. And now, I also appreciated the way you opened with regards to Black politicians and how careful we have to be of Black politicians, because, I'm looking at what's happening here in the New York area and with our elected officials, and we just have to be very vigilant and careful to make sure that we are holding them to task. I'm not trying to say all Black politicians are corrupt, but we have a tendency to think that because they are Black, that they're automatically on our side and will be pushing our best interest, and we just cannot give a blanket pass to anybody in office
Absolutely.
To make sure that they represent our interests. So thank you so much. I really
thank
am
you.
Very grateful, and
I will really
be picking up your book. Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And one of the things I want to say is, a lot of times we keep thinking that everybody Black is in our favor. But who owns the people who are elected? Just like when you go to work and I go to work, people who pay me are the ones who control what I do. The people who put up the big contributions are the ones who control the politicians. They want our votes, but they don't want to give us anything. When you see how any government contract is dispersed, rarely is there a Black or a brown person involved in there, although they want every one of the votes.
Right, and that is a part of the bigger picture of how, politicians use votes, and they use you as commodity. Like, it's big now that everyone says, how do you court a specific, the Latino vote or whatever, the Asian vote, but they never talk about Black folks because they just think that we're commodities that are going to be cheap. So I think that's the way they kind of looked at us.
Well,
you look at
example,
us as politicians.
An example is they're having the mayoral race here in Los Angeles. There are two candidates, Eric Garcetti, whose father was the DA when we were doing this, and a lady by the name of Wendy Gruel. They've both been competing for Black support, but what they do is they go to Black political officials. Magic Johnson and Maxine Waters have jumped on one side. Some of the city council people have jumped on the other side. But not one of these candidates has ever said what they intend to do to improve the situation in South Los Angeles. Not anything. Not economic improvement, not crime improvement, not anything. They only get the support. So people feel, if Magic does it, we'll go with Magic. If
that's
Maxine
right.
does it, we'll go with Maxine. And that's a fallacy.
Right.
We're following false leadership. And the thing
right.
I'm a sports guy. I like sports. But if it's like if you guys know the Knicks, if the team lost for 30 straight years, you'd think of changing management. You'd have to. What fool would follow a team that lost for 30 straight years with the same management? And that's what we're doing. We're following the same straight team because they keep feeding us information, not information, they're feeding us entertainment, videos, and things they want us to hear. We've got one or two people who are basically controlling all black media in this country. You know, Tyler Perry says whatever he wants, and this is nothing against Tyler Perry whatsoever. I'm happy for him. But there are other issues, and there are other people who have ideas and thoughts that might be improving the black community also. We have to have access to ownership of media to do it. We don't have to.
Right, and I want to take a break. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
There are so many fun things we all can do to be healthier, no matter who you are or where you are. So let's move.
Well, here we go. We're getting set to get underway.
Let's stretch in the grass.
Great play.
Let's play tag.
What a play.
Let's jump up and down.
Oh, what a way to finish it.
And most of all, let's eat better so that we have the energy we need to play an hour a day every day.
Everyone can play. Just go to letsmove.gov to learn more.
Before I bring Finesse back on, I want to ask Kai, who is a columnist and author out of Atlanta, Kai Sims, to come on. I know you want to ask a question or say something.
Yes, hi, and welcome. Thank you for such insightful information. We grew up on the East Coast, so I remember, I have memories of Mayor Bradley, but I had no idea that, you know, that it was so deep. And one of the comments you made is, you know, I thought was interesting. You said instead of being worried about the gangs, we're to worry about the politicians. And, I mean, I don't want to sound cynical, but
well, no.
Sometimes they're one and the same, are they not?
Well, but you know what they said? They said a man with a briefcase can steal way more money than any man with a gun.
You're absolutely
right. Politicians carry
You're
briefcases.
Yeah.
You know, now I was raised on the East Coast, so mm-hmm. part of the problem when we
That's
came out
I
here was.
I recognize that accent.
You know, so when we came out here, they called us carpetbaggers and called us names that you guys
right.
from the East, get out of here, get, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're not part of our system. So
mm-hmm.
I don't have to be part of your system then to get my First Amendment rights, do I?
Right, right.
And that was their position, you know.
Well,
so
here's
we just tried
question.
To fight it.
Do you find now, I mean, I was but a baby in the 70s. That's the story
sure,
I'm going to
tell everybody
with.
My age. Go ahead.
I'm sticking with that story. But my question is, I guess, you know, 20, 30 years later, do you see a significant change, or are you finding that you're still fighting that same battle, that crabs in a barrel mentality, and, you know,
it's the
or
same battle
do you see where
it's the same
changed?
People. Look who's in office. The same people who are in office that were in office 30 years ago.
I'm sure.
Whether they've moved from councilman to supervisor to assemblyman to congresswoman, they're all the same people. Maxine was here. I dealt with Maxine Waters when we was here, and we told her about this situation. Maxine Waters told us, you might want to give my husband a little piece of your company, but let me tell you how we work. We don't get ourselves involved with city government because they may get involved with our business. And we leave everybody's – I said, well, the Constitution is everybody's business. She told me, no, it's not. She said, that's between you and the city, and I'm not going to get involved, and I don't really care what they do because that's not my business. And that's the kind of thing we see. You know,
and that's disappointing, you know.
It's grossly disappointing.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing they always tell you is watch your close friends and your enemies can't do you any harm. And that's what we've got to start doing. We've got to hold the politicians we elect accountable. And when we see that they're failing, we've got to get rid of them and get new ones. Just like any other athletics or any other endeavor, if you're a corporation and your company is losing money for 30 straight years, you don't keep the same management. We are losing the game, and we are continuing to lose. The only great thing is the Internet is going to give us an opportunity to have more exposure, and as long as we have the net neutrality rule stay in effect, we will have the ability to actually do more programming that's not centered around one or two people. Again, Magic Johnson has a station. He has the Dodgers. He has this. He has that. Magic's the guy people love around here. Magic's a nice guy. But there's other people here who have an interest in making things happen.
Right.
My interest is not in entertainment or sports. It's in the financial interest. Economic development has got to be a key issue in our growth. Capitalism is based upon the term capital. If you have no capital, you are not playing in capitalism. And our capital is being thrown away to lotteries and every other sort of stupid thing that we can follow.
I wanted to ask your opinion on politics and on those kind of things like our next growth opportunities, because I do work with Internet and Internet companies and that kind of thing. But before, you know, I ask that question, I would just want to add, we have one more panelist. Sorry to overwhelm you today, Clinton.
Oh, no problem. I love talking about it.
Okay, because I know we're going a little bit over for those people in the chat. You can call in 909-265-9189 if you want to join in and just listen to the program. We have Daniel from Houston on. You can go ahead.
Well, it's more of a statement. I just want to thank you very much for telling your story, because if you ask me, this is probably one of the worst civil rights violations in the 20th century. I mean, we can talk about Jim Crow and all the other things that get a lot of press time, but what effectively happened in that seemingly 20-year span is the denial of what over 500,000 people need, which is communication from their base and from their home. And I just thank you guys for putting up the good fight and continuing to bring this to light, because it's sickening that people that look like us wouldn't be about and for us, even if at their own peril, that they would step up and do the right thing. So thank you for at least sticking to your guns, you and your brother.
Thank you, Daniel. I really appreciate it. And, you know, one thing I wanted to point out about the technology. In 1880, they sought to release to keep us from reading. Reading was the thing that they said was going to set all the black people free. In 1980, the deprival of technology was the equivalent of not letting us read. If we don't have access to technology, and it's growing at a geometric pace, how can we expect to keep up with society? We simply can't. And we've been left behind, and nobody seems to have cared. NAACP has never said one word about this case in all the years that it's been out. And they'll never will. Because, again, we're tied to this one-party system, and the Democrats were great in the 60s when we were trying to get our civil rights. But what have you done for me lately? Not a whole lot.
You wonder why, like you said, why we're so far behind, because we're not being fed anything new.
No.
If you haven't seen success any other way, so let's keep doing it the way we've been doing it.
Right.
It's a hurting thing to know that we have so many intelligent people who know the way and want to show us the way, but we have people still standing and blocking the way.
It's the crab barrel concept. As soon as they think you might get out, they're going to pull you back in. And that's the
I want Finesse to jump in here, but I just wanted to say I always said as an independent, although I've done political races on both sides, the trick in life is don't expose your friends, because the people who don't like you will try to take them out first. And secondly, it is a crab in the barrel if you show your hand. So, Vanessa, I'll let you back in on this.
Ms. Galloway, and I've been outspoken on this show and in different platforms about all of a sudden black television networks that are popping up. I would like to hear your thoughts and any advice that you have for those new mediums that are, you know, about to go on this journey.
Well, two things. One is these companies get in line because they can only get on television if Comcast says they can get on television. And if Comcast doesn't like what they say, they will be put off of television. And that's one of the key things. So one of the important things that we have to deal with is the economic issues that affect our communities. We simply we don't even discuss them. We don't discuss the entire the situation of the regulation of drugs, for one thing. You're telling me that guys, I live in California. On Venice Beach, these guys are smoking pot up and down the street all day. But if you go to South Central, they're arresting guys and putting them in jail for 10 years for doing the same thing. Where is the law? Where is the balance? There is no balance because no one has the access to the media. People get murdered every day in Chicago, but I hear all day about some one lady who killed her husband or might have killed her husband in some town in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Last Wednesday, 33 people got shot in Chicago in one night.
Mm-hmm.
One night. And then they tell me about five people got killed in a war zone in Afghanistan. Well, that's one thing. But for this average citizen to be gunned down in this sort of numbers each night, and it's not just in L.A. or Chicago or Philly or Detroit. It's all over the country. In every urban minority community, this is going on. Mass murder is going on every night, and we're pretending that it doesn't happen because the media does not cover it. And that's what I call an unholy alliance between government and media.
For the media that we do have, like black newspaper, certain radio programs, be it on terrestrial radio or internet radio, what are some of the things that we can do better, and how can we get people to support?
Well, I think the important thing is to bring them information and knowledge that they need. We need knowledge, not only entertainment. We need knowledge. We need to understand how this economic system works. That, yes, there are plenty of opportunities. People are coming from all over the world to come in here and own businesses. But we cannot put together the capital together. We're afraid of each other, as the media has made us to be afraid of each other. We fear each other. Who do we fear most? We fear black people most. Who's going to kill us? It's generally going to be a black person as opposed to a white person killing a black person. So we have to stop this whole concept of fear in ourselves and start to develop a group mentality where we say, we all have a common goal. Let's all put our resources together for this common goal, be it the internet, the radio, television, newspapers. For example, in Los Angeles, the only major black newspaper here, The Sentinel, is owned by a gentleman by the name of Danny Bakewell. He was key as part of keeping cable from coming into this system. He was part of Mayor Tom Bradley's system. So we can't expect they're going to give us independent information when he's so tied to the political structure here.
Wow.
Yeah. I kept thinking while he was talking about this, we don't own country clubs, for example, right? And so you don't know what everybody else's alliance and allegiance is. And he's right. It's a farm system when you talk politics. It's like you don't know if that cat worked in somebody else's office. So their allegiance is to the person who employed them. So to come in to try to get into any industry, and I don't care if it is, you know, media, if it's in sports or business, you have to always work outside the system. And one of the things that I kind of employ as a strategist, I don't know how any of the two parties work. I just know how to take them, right?
Right.
And so the issue is we have to have enough black people who understand how these systems work and network. But if you tell them that you're networking, then that's going to be problematic. It's kind of how the country works. That is a part of one of the things I want to ask you is, what was the most surprising thing that you found in going through that whole process? Not the fairness, because we know that we've had that House field thing going on for a long time, but what did you find most problematic and surprising out of the whole process of going through the cable situation?
I would say there were really two key issues that I found extremely problematic. One was the U.S. District Court judge, that we seek protection from the federal courts. When she refused us, they figured we'd run out of money. That was what their game was. They just figured these are black guys, they'll run out of money. We took this to the United States Supreme Court. They ruled 9-0 in our favor. And a black judge says, not only am I not going to allow the Supreme Court verdict to be utilized here, I'm going to prevent you from getting into the business for 6 years, and when I finally rule that you're right, I'm not going to allow you to enter the business. The city's laws are still the same. They still prohibit more than one company on the wire, which is contrary to the Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court. But a black federal judge, to have the same name as Thurgood, last name as Thurgood Marshall, is a disgrace. It's just a disgrace.
Yeah.
The other thing
that troubles me. It makes you want to holler. It really does.
I mean, we sought the protection. If this had been Mississippi, everybody would be screaming about the racism of Mississippi.
Right.
But there is racism in black America, among blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to accept that the politicians continue to get rich. Nobody comes out of politics poor. You can go to any other job, and you might come out poor. But you can never come out poor in politics. Everybody comes out rich. And there must be a reason why a person who's a public servant is coming out rich. And I don't think it's because they're being so concerned about the public service. I think they're being more concerned about themselves.
Yeah.
The second issue that really became a critical and hurtful issue to me was that not one elected official, black organization, or any civil rights organization ever stood up for a major civil rights issue that went on in this country. There was only a certain time frame that you could get in. See, if we hadn't got in 1979, they'd say, well, you had a chance in 79 to do it. Now it's 2013. Why didn't you do it then? We did do it then. You locked us out. You allowed the courts, which we should have protected our constitutional rights. So we can't blame the Supreme Court and say, oh, they're a conservative Supreme Court. It was a 9-0 verdict, unanimous. And she simply said, I don't care what they said, I'm not going to allow you to do it, because the mayor owned her, period.
Now, there was something, because one of your investors, he was Arab, correct?
Pardon me?
Wasn't one of your investors Arab Saudi?
The final investor, when the city came back and said, well, we won't accept investment bank commitments, we won't accept all the commitments that you have from the doctors who work here in town, we finally had it. We went to the man who was the richest man in the world at that point, Adnan Khashoggi, who was a Saudi. He said, I will guarantee their $40 million. Because we knew his son, and since she worked at Cedars-Sinai, you probably knew Dr. Herbert Avery, okay? So he had introduced us to Muhammad Khashoggi, who said, this is ridiculous. This is just a travesty. So he called his father, and his father said, look, I'll guarantee $40 million. That's not a big deal to him. He sent a letter and guaranteed the $40 million, and when they got the letter, they said, well, we don't accept letters of credit from Arabs and Red Chinese. And it was set on the floor of the council. It was set on the floor in front of the full city council, and no one in the Times reported it. But if you go to our website, anatomyofahustle.com, we've got the hearing tapes that you can hear. We've got the documents that went into the whole issue. We've got the court case. We've got the records. We've got the depositions. You see the deposition of Tom Bradley. He talks about people came, you know, Eli Broad, who's a very wealthy philanthropist here, came to talk to him about cable. Did he come to lobby you? No. He just came to see me about South. Why would he be interested in South Central Los Angeles cable? He's one of the richest men in the world. But again, it was to control the vote of the South Central area and to keep them under the control that they had always been under. And that we stand to that control right now.
And so when people did come to South Central, it came as another group, correct?
Correct. South Central went to a company called Kaufman & Broad, or KB Homes now, which was owned by Eli Broad, who was, you know, one of the richest men in America at this point. He received it, and he brought in Danny Bakewell and the other people who were telling us we had to give them two-thirds of our company. They accepted 20% from him and said, we'll give you 20%. And they were, like, jumping all over the room. But 20%, we'd have given it to them, because that's just a nuisance factor in this business. But 20%, we offered them 50%, they wouldn't take it. They said, we can't have 50% because then you'd be equal with us. So they wouldn't take 50% from us. They wanted two-thirds, and they would take 20% from someone else who never even built the system. They didn't even build the system. They defaulted on the contract and were allowed to sell it to a third party without it ever going back for relicensing. So they defaulted. They put up tens of thousands of dollars for Bradley's campaign for governor, and they netted $10 million when they sold the franchise.
And if I'm not mistaken, those same black politicians or black elected officials that didn't back you, they backed that initiative, correct?
Absolutely. 100%. They got the unanimous vote. We couldn't get enough votes. And it was a black politician. We ended up losing on a 7-6 vote. And it was a black councilman by the name of David Cunningham, who was the one who made sure that we didn't get the vote. And he said, we want excellence. Well, what excellence? They offered the same thing that we had offered a year later, but they got because they came.
So essentially, they were just saying that you can provide the excellence, right?
Yeah. If as long as you're not black, you can provide excellence. As long as it's the same system, same number of channels, same basic design, same everything. We had engineers, we had people. This company was not even in the cable television industry. They had nobody in cable. They were building homes, but yet they got it and they were allowed to sell it for $10 million. And
Did you say they were building homes?
KB Homes is one of the largest home builders in the country.
Yes, they are.
They build homes.
It's
they were
just
in the
baffling
real estate.
The ignorance as well as the arrogance that, I mean, I'm just wondering how some of these people actually lay down and slept at night with this. I mean, the whole giving you guys a dollar thing, that was an insult in itself. But just the continual arrogance and ignorance that continue to go on year after year after year is, you know, I'm feeling like wow, am I that naive that it really gets that ugly?
But and unless someone knows.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is just really eye-opening to me. And I know,
but I think
know,
your word arrogance is exactly what we found when we went there. They were insulted that we would not simply accept their two-thirds deal for them to take two-thirds. They were insulted. I mean, legitimately insulted. Like we had slapped them or something. If you're telling us you're not going to do what we told you to do, and
yeah.
we, the mayor's told you that you're going to do it this way, you're insulting the mayor when you tell us you're not going to give us two-thirds of your company. And that is arrogant.
Yeah.
It is, well, it's of its worst form. And I just want to jump in for a second because what we're looking at now in Southeast Queens with our elected officials. Oh, all right.
I
hey.
Grew up in Jamaica, Queens.
That's where I am. That's where
okay.
I am. So with the elected officials here who are now being brought up, being investigated and brought up on charges, the very reasons that they are being brought up on charges are the exact situations that you are describing right now. Being able to take and put business people in positions based on their contributions to their campaigns or whatever other kind of kickback that the elected official will receive from promoting one person over another. So they are currently, these black elected officials, a couple of them are being looked at now to go to jail for this very thing. So, yes, and so the question that I have is, what about these elected officials? Have there been no charges brought against any of them, if not for this particular situation, for anything else? Because if they were doing it with you, they were doing it all over the city.
They were doing this with everything in the city. The only reason we ended up in federal court is because our issue was a constitutional issue. If it was just about real estate or contracts, we couldn't even sue them.
Yeah.
But they've been doing this. You know, the person who voted against us, David Cunningham, about a year or two after we had gone through the process and he had voted against us, as soon as he voted for the contract with Eli Broad and Danny Bakewell, he went to work for Danny Bakewell, who then was underwriting. All of a sudden he had a securities firm which was underwriting municipal securities for the city. Then he was in real estate. Then he was a civil rights leader. Then he's this. He's everything. As the LA Times said, Danny Bakewell is the godfather of South Central. And he sued them, and the court said, hey, they haven't said anything that's wrong, so that's the case.
Right.
And what we see is the politicians are continuing to do the same thing. They come from one office and go to another. They're just moving from office to office. They're playing musical chairs, but it's the same people. And as long as we've got the same people, unless we start electing integrity, it used to be we had the church to give us a place to gather and gather information about what was going on in our community. A lot of people are going unchurched now. They've gotten away from church.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have anywhere that we can gather. It's a major problem from my view, because if we don't have the morals and the images that our children see are the images they project to them of violence and telling them that the thug life and the gang life is a valid lifestyle. Getting locked up in a 10-by-10 cell for the next 20 years, is that really a good lifestyle for anybody? Yet they tell each other, well, unless you had some time in jail, you don't have any street cred. But you guys are fools. That's all you guys are, a guy who's happy about being locked up for 5 years.
Right.
That's not good sense.
What's happened here in New York is that the politicians have locked arms with the prominent clergy. So that's what's going on there. So
I know about it, Floyd
Blake.
Absolutely. You know.
Yeah, there you go.
So I know. My nephew used to work for him.
So all the prominent clergy, anybody who even Mayor Bloomberg, when he was running for his last election, he went to all of the major, the top clergy in the area and got endorsements from them. And this,
And they got things from him.
They were allowed
to build certain things, certain, senior citizens' homes and do things like that, where they were profit-making entities for these people. The danger is there. It's a matter of how we deal with the danger. This is a cautionary. I want people to know, because it's not about me or about my brother. My brother is passed now. But the last thing he asked me to do is tell this story, because they'll come back 20 years from now and say, we never tried to get involved in media and television and cable. And yes, we did. And that's the whole point of this. We tried from the very beginning. There was only a small window. And so, that two-year window that opened, we had to go and pursue it at that point. That's why we couldn't walk away. I mean, I had a great job. I was working at an investment banking firm in Beverly Hills, my dream job. My brother was a doctor. He had you know, he'd been a doctor since he was 23. He got a high school when he was 15. He was a very bright man. So these things to take, and there are other so many other bright young black men out here who are forced into other activities that they cannot utilize their skills at. It deprives our community of their knowledge, of their ability, and it drives them into gangs.
I got to ask, has any mainstream media, other than internet radio, have they ever approached you about an interview?
Not since the book has been published, but prior to the book being published, when we were going through all this, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Barron's, Fortune Magazine, Money Magazine, they all had major stories about this issue. Although Ebony never covered it, the Amsterdam News never covered it, the Sentinel never covered it, no black media ever covered it, but major media did cover it. And they covered it from the standpoint of the economic development and the racism and the pure crime that went on of allowing government officials to come and threaten you to take your company. The FBI was involved. Everybody was involved in this. And the FBI told us, you better be real careful about the people you're dealing with, which gave me the impression of you're dealing with straight-up thugs like anywhere else. And so I took that to heart. And they told me to move out of the city of Los Angeles because you're going to end up one day with the LAPD at your door, and you're not going to know why. And so I moved out of the city of Los Angeles into an unincorporated area of the county of Los Angeles.
Wow. So it got that deep where you guys were secretly either being videotaped, bugged, or threatened.
Absolutely. And they didn't have any threat. They didn't mind threatening you because they were insulted that you would not just simply back down to their threat. It's like you walk down the street and some guy says, give me $5. And you look like this guy like he's a fool. And that's the way we look at these elected officials. You must think I'm crazy. I mean, I've come up with an idea that's going to do something that's going to help our community, and you only want to get it, you can sell it, and make some money, some quick, dirty money. They didn't want to build a system. If they wanted to build a system, we'd have been a lot more receptive to them. But they told us, we just want to get in here, we can turn it over and make a couple of $1 million. They offered us $2 million to walk out. What do you sell your people out for? For $2 million? For $200 million? For $5,000? There's no price to sell your people out. If you want to be a Judas, you're a Judas. That's all you can be. And that 30 pieces of silver didn't save him, did it?
I'm not sure if you're familiar with who John Dove is, but John Dove passed away a few years ago, but he created the CD-ROM technology, the laser light technology.
Oh, wow.
And he passed away with Sony and all these other major, major companies not paying him a dime. They put money in trust so they wouldn't have to pay him. So he developed it in 68, and I met him, talked to him quite a few. His daughter actually lives in, I want to say she's in L.A. She's in L.A., but they're still suing. And he went in front of the patents office. I don't mean to step on the story, but I think grateful that you're telling the story. But John Dove told me this in private before he passed, but he said when he came out in 68 with that technology, J. Edgar Hoover put him up under the hot lights. He was arrested, he was taken away, and went in front of the U.S. Patent Office in front of a judge and pleaded his case for his patent. I guess the patent office attorney, the head of the patent office at the time, said to the judge, we don't want a black man having access to information or technology that can change the scope of how we do business, is pretty much is how he said it. But he just said he didn't want the black man to have technology. The judge said that's what a patent is and gave him his patent. Now, the smaller companies paid him, but the bigger companies still wouldn't. So his story goes, during Reagan's time, he cut a deal, told them they can let the money go to the national debt and give him whatever percentage that he asked them for. And when Clinton was elected, they reneged on the deal. So he never got paid till he passed.
Which doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised to hear this story because I'd never heard that story before. And I've been involved in media and things like this for many a year, as you can see. But that is a tremendous story. And that's something people need to know because they know how we can do things on our own and make things happen. But it's the government who fights. It's not benign neglect. People tend to think that we have a problem because of the benign neglect of government. It's not. It's an aggressive, affirmative activity designed to keep us from achieving what we are entitled to achieve in a free society. That's how simple it is. No government spends $10 million to deprive poor people of cable television. The city of Los Angeles did. Now they claim they're broke and they have to fire the policemen, they have to fire the firemen, they have to fire everybody. They didn't have to fire anybody when they spent $10 million trying to keep black people from talking to black people. That was the whole purpose of cable. Cable was called community antenna television. It was designed to be set up by community, not national issues, local issues, where people could talk among themselves without having to be, you know, ciphered or, you know, censored through someone else. Talk among ourselves so we can criticize, because we need to criticize ourselves about things. But white media is afraid to criticize us a lot of times because they say, well, you'll say we're racist. But if we criticize ourselves, we have an absolute right to criticize what was failure. And our politicians have failed us, abysmally failed us. And it's time to get rid of and get a new crop in. We need to start looking at the integrity of the people we put in as opposed to the issues they claim they're representing, which never happened. Everybody's talked about what they're going to do economically for South Central. Nothing's ever happened down there. Nothing.
Well, and the question is, too, what are they so afraid of? That what are they, if integrity is in place, why are those they so afraid that black people would talk to other black people? It's like J. Edgar Hoover is still alive, you know. They're so busy concerned about what's going on in our community that they can't function in their own community. Why is everyone so afraid when black people talk to black people?
Because what we have to realize is we are the swing vote for the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party cannot win national elections without the black vote. And if they think that vote becomes diluted somehow or somehow is not fully under their control and jurisdiction, they fear that they cannot get through what they want to get through. And these things have little to do with what anything's going to improve the black community. They take our votes for granted. They simply assume that we're going to vote for them. And they've been right. We've been voting for them because people come out and say, vote for them. They get movie stars. They get sports stars. But they don't do anything for the community. The black vote is the swing vote in this nation, and it will decide who gets elected when. And that's something we have to really stop and look at and evaluate it as being a valuable tool that we have and stop listening to everybody telling us just elect somebody because the Democrats put them up. We need to look at different people who have integrity, independence, and other various views that have our interests at heart, the economic development, the health care, the education. These things are primary to any free society. Without those, you cannot have a free society. You cannot have a stupid populace in a democracy. And I hate to say it, but in America, we have a stupid populace. And you see what's happened. You see the government we've got. We've gotten a bunch of clowns running government.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think it's just a very uninformed populace as well. But I want to make sure I say this. AnatomyOfAHustle.com, www.anatomyofahustle.com to get the book. You're listening to author Clinton Galloway on Black Crime. I want to thank you for coming. I know we only have a few minutes left, but I do want to kind of cycle through everybody to see if you have one last question for them. We'll run over if we have to, but I want to just kind of check on everybody. I'll take Finesse last, but I want to start with Daniel. Daniel, do you have a quick question?
Well, just I've been enlightened to no end that this happens even today, that we have folks that are trying to squash what little it is that we are trying to do in our community or to better our communities, and even the story about, forgot the name, about the CD technology.
John Doe. That's
disheartening as well, is that we've got people that are doing things or have the mentality or the intellect to do wonderful things, but we're being head off at every pass. So it puts in my brain and in my heart to try to push our agendas whenever I can. And, brother, if you can ignite a movement of some type and name it something that we can all get behind, please go to your workshop and think about it, because I'd be all behind it.
I sure will, and I really appreciate being here and talking to everybody, because spreading the word is what it's about. Telling the story is what this is really about for me. You know, it's been a long battle, and the battle was fought as hard as we could fight it. My brother had lost his life over it, you know, because the stress of this is tremendous. When you're fighting governments, you're fighting federal courts, and you got attorney generals and district attorneys, and they're all giving you a bunch of double-talking lies, you think, well, what's the point? But I can only say we never gave up because we don't know how to quit. And there's so many black people out there who have the same attitude we do, and that's where we got it from. Our communities raised us, not just our parents, our communities. And that was what they taught us in our community.
We have on www.soulofsyracuse.com information about John Dove. We're going to put some up and some contact information. Hopefully we can get some. We'll point them to your website for Clinton Gallo in his book. We'll put that up there, www.soulofsyracuse.com. And next, columnist at soulofsyracuse.com and author Kai Sims.
Well, I first just want to say thank you for the enlightenment. I've already shared your information as we were talking And, you know, I'm excited to go out and get the book, and I think this might be the beginning of another movement. You know, and I'm just so grateful that I've had the opportunity to speak with you and would love the opportunity to stay in touch. Just like Daniel said, wherever you are, whatever support you need, please keep us informed so that we can pass. I mean, if the media is not going to do it, then we'll find a way to do it, you know.
Yep, right.
We can do it on the Negro Net, you know, whatever way you want to call it. We pass
the
information along.
We can definitely get that information out and definitely keep in contact.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. It means so much to tell people the story of what we as a race have gone through. It's not just about me. I'm doing okay. I'm not suffering. But as a race, I see our people getting gunned down, uneducated, thrown in jail, and it's just a bit, all I can think of, I'm just so happy I didn't have to go before this judge on a criminal violation.
Right.
The law means nothing in these courts. The law means nothing.
I know.
If the Supreme Court means nothing, then what other law can mean anything?
Right.
So you see how our kids end up in jail without ever doing anything because they just run them through a mill. This is just a penitentiary mill they're running in courts now.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Queens and ask Kathleen if there's a final word or a question that you want to ask.
Both, thank you. And thank you again for being here. There's just a couple of things I wanted to highlight real quickly. Just for everyone listening, what I hear you saying, that the underbelly of this entire situation that you've gone through, that many of us may not really hear very hear very thoroughly, or if we do hear it, we kind of like skip by it.
Right.
And that is the authentic and very real fear for your life in trying to improve the situation and the economic condition of the black community to the point where you're being told by government officials that maybe you need to move, leave the state. You're the people that you are battling and what they are presenting you with presents a very real fear that many of us sometimes think is only the movies. So I just wanted to highlight that a little bit because that's what I hear. I don't know if that's, I don't want to put words in your mouth and say that's what you're saying, but that's kind of what I hear.
No, and that's what happens. Whenever somebody tries to go and improve anything in the community, they find a way to stop them. Oh, they say, well, if we were to go in and raise money, if we were to go in and raise money a dollar at a time in our own community and say, you have a chance of losing this money, you have a chance of making some money back, we would be in violation of securities laws and subject to a 10-year imprisonment. Now, you go into a lottery and tell them you've got a $300 million-to-one chance, and they can take $50, $100, $1,000 from you anytime they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make any sense. You can't invest, but you can gamble all you want. Without any sort of background, without any belief that you have the ability to sustain that loss, that is just crazy. And when they first, when the lottery is little more than a numbers game, and when the numbers game was big in the 1950s, somebody in the government said the worst thing and the most detrimental thing that ever happened to poor people was the numbers game, because there's no way you're going to win. You've got a better chance of getting hit by lightning twice than winning a lottery.
All
we ever see is winners on the lottery. That's all we ever
see.
We never see the losers.
That's what we see.
And
absolutely
that's what the media
right.
does. They keep pushing this issue of, oh, the lottery is going to change your life. It's only going to change your life by taking money out of your pocket. If we take that same money and put it into our communities, we can build jobs, we can build industry, we can build all the things we need in our communities to make it a self-sustaining, viable community that we'll be proud to live in.
Amen. So the other thing I wanted to say real quick is I'm also hearing is Anatomy of a Hustle, the movie. So I am praying.
We all like that idea.
That's where you're going next. And in light of that, my last question is, what are you doing now? And like everyone else, you know, how can we support you?
Well, I'm a CPA. I run a business management service, and I deal with a lot of the people in the entertainment industry, to be honest. And it's funny you mentioned the movie thing. My PR person just sent me a notice that someone had asked about optioning the book for a movie. And we looked him up. That person had a lot of experience. I haven't really even given any thought to such things, to be perfectly honest.
Well, give it thought.
As a CPA, you know, until April 15th, I didn't get much time off. So, and, you know, doing interviews, and we did, you know, several book signings here in Los Angeles. And everyone seems to be amazed to hear the story because they'd never heard it, that how can something so important not ever be told to people. Keeping them ignorant is how we keep control over people who don't have power, and that's what they've been doing to us. and we've got to stop it. You're doing it right now by putting this on the air and by you people asking questions and letting people know what's going on. That's what I look forward to, and I thank you all for bringing us to the public's view and having the courage to put it out there.
Man, if you don't make a movie out of this...
Well, I'm looking for somebody to help me make a movie out of it.
Kathleen, Tyler Perry. No, just joking.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Tyler
don't make me start.
I'm with Tyler, too. He'd be my
Kathleen
friend.
Kathleen put it in the atmosphere, and now we have to move it forward.
There are a lot of people out there that makes movies. Finesse, we want to bring Finesse in because I know he probably wants to close out as well.
One question, Mr. Galloway. Can you give everybody your website where they can go and get check out the information and also pick up the book?
Sure. All the information is contained at anatomyofahustle.com. And you can have access to the Supreme Court rulings. You can have access to all the rulings that the various courts made. And you can hear the actual audio tapes of the hearings we went to, how they simply changed rules right in the middle of hearings, how people in the same government told us this is the rule and this is the rule, two different rules on the same day in the same hearing that we were told. So I want people to hear that so they can see what we were faced with and why we decided the only protection we had was to seek protection out of the federal courts. And when that protection failed, we were left unprotected. And you wonder why people went rioting in 1992, because the courts weren't upholding any laws here. You see, they could beat people down on the ground and have video of it and still war. And who came in to stop that? The federal government. The federal government came in to prosecute the policemen here because Mayor Bradley was a policeman. He knew what they did. He knew what the police did to black people here, and he pretended it didn't exist. And that's why we're in the mess we're in, because we don't have the people with integrity in office that we need, that we spend too much time about issues that we never get anyway. And let's put people in integrity will solve the issues. Issues won't solve the integrity. And we see people, just like she talked about in Jamaica, Queens, how the guy was trying to go for mayor and was doing all sorts of shady deals. We see Jesse's son in Chicago. We see the mayor of Detroit. All these people are going down, and they didn't learn it by themselves. Let's be sure of this. They didn't come up with this themselves. This is something that's going on in America for quite a while. But to do it to the poorest people and to those who have the least is just a disgrace.
I want to thank you again. There's a lot of information for us to take and digest. I'm going to give you a call in about 5 minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about John Dove and his background, if that's okay.
I appreciate it. That'd be great.
Okay.
And thank you for having me on. It really means a lot to speak to such intelligent people about an issue like this. It's so important to our people.
Yes, and definitely we're available to you if you want to come on for anything else. You want to plug the movie? We can do that too. So.
Hey.
We'll see if that happens. You know?
Hey, I was going to say before you plug the movie, we have a couple of actors on the line, so don't really plug your
movie.
I've got
to show
me in LA, you got plenty of actors.
Exactly. Right. We have actors and we have writers on this end, so that's cool. But again, I want to thank Clinton Galloway for coming in and joining the program. You can catch him at www.anatomyofahustle.com to get his book. Check it out. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. Colin Mackay Sims on with, I think that's Daniel on Making Noise. Daniel Woodson
hey,
and
Kathleen. We gotta get Denzel to play Mr. Galloway.
Oh, that'd be a dream. I'd probably be able to get a date after that.
There you go.
I concur.